This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Folks, welcome in to Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Superbook Sports. Oh, gosh, I did it again. I'm your host, Ryan Blackburn, at NBA Blackburn on Twitter. Oh, gosh, I hate when I do that, man. It's Bet Online, and it's number 38, part of the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. I'm just going to keep doing it, I guess, until I get yelled at. Like I said, part of the Mile High Sports Podcast Network, and I'm excited to talk to everybody about. Actually, guess not excited. Excited is the wrong word, but I think this is part of the NBA atmosphere, the NBA ethos that's going on right now. The Boston Celtics are on the brink of winning their first NBA championship with the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown core. Though they did lose tonight. They lost game four by 38 points, which is hilarious. When the shots aren't going down, they really aren't going down for that team. And it's not really a surprise that a game like that can happen. I wouldn't overreact to that if I were an NBA fan, if I were a Nuggets fan. I still think that Boston is clearly going to win that series. But hey, maybe Dallas can, like they've been close a couple times. Maybe they can take advantage of the momentum. Maybe they figured some stuff out. We will see what happens, although I don't necessarily think that they've really figured much out. I think Boston kind of played a dumb game tonight. We'll talk about that, I guess, just a little bit. But most of this podcast is going to be in relation to the Nuggets, kind of talking about how Boston built their squad, what Denver can learn from it. Will Denver versus Boston NBA Finals ever actually happen? I'm going to talk about why Denver doesn't have any future picks. There's a lot of stuff that we're going to get into on tonight's episode, so I hope everybody is fastened their seatbelts. Should be good. First, I got to tell everybody about Bet Online, the number one source for the NBA and NHL final, or the Stanley Cup finals, excuse me. There's a lot of great things that you can do with Bet Online. Oh gosh, as I totally missed my. There it is. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to their online casino, get in on the blackjack, unwind with some poker or some slots games. Head over to their website today, get in on the action, use their promo code BELIEVE for your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts here. All right, let's get into the show. I know it's a Friday night, not necessarily expecting this one to be super packed, so if you're sticking around, I appreciate it. I saw some comments come through earlier, including from Cedric. When will you give us an opportunity to super chat? I'll put in a word to the bosses over at MHS to see whether we can or not. I realize it's hard to sort of differentiate where money like that goes, but I'll make sure to put in a good word for super chat as an option. The Celtics, obviously they lose game four. It's still kind of an inevitability that Boston's going to win this thing. No team's ever come back from down 3-0. Maybe a team led by Luka Doncic could be the team. Thought that Luka played a really great game tonight. Boston, like I said at the beginning, didn't necessarily play their smartest game, but it was still what I would call. The cat's over there. Still what I would call a Boston, like, they're in control. They're in the driver's seat for this one. Now, the only way that you can ever get a 3-0 comeback is by starting it off with a Game 4 win. So we'll see whether Dallas can sort of prop themselves up like that. But I think in general that Boston didn't necessarily play their best game. They'll play better at home. They'll shoot better at home. At least that's the theory of the practice. And if they keep their heads on straight, then they should get it done. I don't really expect Dallas to be able to maintain that level of defensive intensity, that level of desperation over the course of another three games after going to six games in the first round, six in the second round, and five in the third. They are tired. They're as tired as any team. They have more reinforcements and a little bit more youth than some teams, but they do also bleed. So it's not really a surprise, in my opinion, that they seemed a little bit gassed out at the beginning of this series. Desperation got them back into it in this game four. We'll see if they could take that effort on the road in game five. I don't really expect them to, which is why I'm just going to continue with this podcast. I wanted to talk about sort of how Boston built their team, how it differentiates or how it differs from what Denver has done so far, and if there's anything that the Nuggets can learn from that experience, what Boston has done. There's a lot of things that could be said, but the best way to do it is just to start with what their roster looks like and the two moves that they made this offseason, trading for Kristaps Porzingis and Jrue Holiday in two aggregation deals where they paired multiple contracts, multiple picks in order to acquire two very important players for their team. Boston acquired Porzingis in a three-way trade with Memphis, Washington, and Boston. And they sent out Marcus Smart, Danilo Gallinari, Mike Muscala, and the 35th overall pick in the draft in 2023. And they got back Porzingis, the 25th pick in the 2023 draft, and a top four protected 2024 Warriors pick. At the time, that trade looked insane because it looked like Boston was just absolutely destroying both Washington and Memphis in those deals. And in retrospect, it is exactly like that. Not only did they move up 10 spots in the draft, exchanging out Porzingis, then extending him, but they also got an extra first-round pick that they then parlayed in the Jrue Holiday trade. I'll talk about that in just a bit. There was risk, obviously, with acquiring a guy like Porzingis, who had had injury history, hadn't necessarily been part of winning cultures. They were compensated for that, though. They were compensated for that gamble. Not only did they move up 10 spots, but they also got an extra first-round pick from the Warriors, who are, like, at the tail end of their run. That Warriors pick, by the way, I think is the 14th overall pick in the draft this year, which is pretty solid. That's a pretty solid pick if you're taking anybody's pick. So that went to the Blazers, and we'll talk about that in just a bit. But the funny thing is Boston couldn't have done this deal this offseason. If they had all of those guys, Marcus Smart, Danilo Gallinari, Mike Muscala, if they had the same situation, the new CBA would have prevented them from aggregating those contracts to trade for Kristaps Porzingis. It could not have happened because of the aggregation salary rule when you're above the second apron, and Boston would have been. Now, the Jrue Holiday trade, basically the same thing. Malcolm Brogdon, Robert Williams, and then they flipped that same Warriors pick along with their 2029 first round pick, unprotected, to the Blazers for Jrue Holiday. They reused that asset that they got from the initial Porzingis trade and then parlayed it into Jrue Holiday. And so they had these extra contracts, these extra guys that they were willing to flip. They were very, very good already with Malcolm Brogdon, with Robert Williams, but turning those guys into the right players into the right talent to fit around their core was extremely important. They knew that they had Jason Tatum. They knew that they had Jaylen Brown. They knew they had Derek White. What do you do to bolster those guys? Well, you get another elite defensive guard so that if they don't want to, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown never have to guard. And now they did. And that's what makes Boston really special, especially defensively, is they have the ability to take on those contracts and to take on different assignments because they share responsibilities on both ends of the floor. But then Kristaps Porzingis allowed, by acquiring him, it allowed Al Horford to then move to the bench. And Al Horford then becomes an elite sixth man. Al Horford, though, was a free agent at the time, and they re-signed him to a two-year, $20 million contract, which was a great, great deal. It's really, really interesting to see the way that they turned, who was an aging player, somebody who, yeah, nobody knew what it was going to look like. 2022, Horford was great. 2023, Horford wasn't as great, but he still had some moments against Joel Embiid and players like that, but then couldn't really keep up against the Heat. They re-signed him anyway to a two-year deal, and Horford, age 38 season, still kicking. And that's your top six. Those are six very, very, very good players. And they bolstered that group with Sam Hauser, Peyton Pritchard, Xavier Tillman and Jaden Springer at the deadline, Luke Kornet. All of these guys can contribute in their own ways, but it's interesting. Sam Hauser's been on their team for like 4 years. Peyton Pritchard's been on their team for 4 years. Luke Kornet's been in their organization for like in and out for a while, but he's been on their team for about 3 years. All of them have been very cheap. All have been on the come up. And so that's somewhere where if you're Denver, you can compare to that favorably. You know that the Nuggets have done that. They've absolutely, the Nuggets are absolutely trying to do that. They're trying to keep players in their organization as long as possible, especially at a young age. So then they could re-sign them and re-up them and do the right thing in order to bolster their team in the long term around the fringes. The only other guys that are not like that, Xavier Tillman, Jaden Springer, those are good, like, proactive moves. But it's not like Denver's 7 through 15, like on their roster, their 7th man to their 15th man. Like, they're roughly equal to Boston's. I won't say that one is better than the other. Some of them are better, some of them are worse. Overall, it's about the same. Now, if you go down the list, Denver's first best player, Nikola Jokic, way better than Boston's first best player in Tatum. Denver's number two, Jamal Murray, was well below Jaylen Brown this year. Well below. That wasn't the case the previous year, especially in the playoffs. But this year, it was true. Denver's 3 through 5, Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I'd call them equal, maybe slightly worse than Boston's 3 through 5. 3 through 5, Derek White, Drew Holiday, Kristaps Porzingis. The real difference maker is the sixth man. If you believe that Jamal Murray will bounce back and play better going forward, I don't see that as much of a gap. Denver's sixth man, Reggie Jackson, way worse, way less versatile than Al Horford. And that's fine. Like, both of those guys older. Denver's going to have to figure that out. That's where they've got to improve the most. If you look down the list, Denver's obviously not that far off from a team like Boston. Boston, they have done some great things in order to really bolster their team. On the other side, I'm going to talk about it from a draft capital standpoint. I'm going to talk about it from a process standpoint. That's another interesting part of the conversation. One of the things that really stands out about Boston is that they've kept their draft picks alive, and Denver has not. Denver is now in a position where they're very reliant on the players that are in-house to make good on those draft picks. We'll see whether they can. We'll be right back on Pickaxe and Roll. But first, this podcast, as you know, is brought to you by our good friends over at Number 38. Up in Rhino, Number 38 is the place to be for this summer. You want to go watch a Rockies game? You want to go hit a concert? you want to just be in the Rhino area, really nice place to be, head on over to Number 38. They've got great brunch options. They've got great different variety amounts of food. They've got a bunch of beers on tap. They've got a bunch of different mixed drink options. Outdoor patio area. Really great stuff over at Number 38. Make sure to go check it out. Let them know that you came from us at Mile High Sports, and maybe they could get you hooked up with a $15 pitcher. Number 38, one of the sponsors for Mile High Sports. We'll be right back on Pickaxe and Roll.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Back at it. Pickaxe and Roll. Ryan Blackburn here. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button. Really appreciate you sticking around. Let's go to draft picks, which is, I know this is kind of a boring way to do it. I just want to talk through this. Boston has only committed their 2029 first round pick. They have all of their other ones. Despite the fact that they're about to win the championship, they are like, we'll see whether that's the jinx. I don't see any way. I don't see any way Boston loses here. Despite the fact that Boston has been a contender for a while and has like had to spend on a lot of different players. They've traded for a lot of different pieces. They've signed different people. They still have they have their 2024 pick. They have their 2025, 2026, 2027, 2028. They do not have their 2029, and then they have all their future picks after that. That is a really healthy roster. Now, it's not like they're going to get awesome picks. They're probably getting the 26th to 30th overall pick. Most of these years, I expect them to be a top team in the East for the foreseeable future. I don't really expect Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Derek White to really go anywhere. That team is very, very good, and they're going to stay really good. I don't see any team in the East really cracking down on them over the course of these next few years. Contrast that with where Denver's at. Where did Denver's draft picks go? Like, Denver used their original 2023 and 2025 first-round picks to trade for Aaron Gordon. Unequivocally a good move. Denver sent their 2027 first along with JaMychal Green to the Oklahoma City Thunder for the 30th pick in the 2023 draft. It was a bit of a salary dump. They did use that money, or they did use that pick on Peyton Watson, and Watson looks like he can be a player. Through 2 years, he hasn't contributed in the playoffs at all, which that's really how these things are going to be graded from here on out. For Watson, in my opinion, can you be a playoff rotation player? I think he can be. I think he probably deserved to be in there against Minnesota, but I understand why he wasn't out there. He's got to continue to get better. Next, Denver traded their 2029 first round pick to the Oklahoma City Thunder for a 2024 first round pick and an early second rounder in 2023. That was before the 2023 draft, by the way. That was during the NBA Finals. I remember covering that trade while I was in Miami. I was sitting in a hotel in Miami writing in their lobby about this trade and what the hell Denver was doing. I think I had a mimosa. Denver then turned both of those picks, that future 2024 first, which they would have had this year, along with that early second rounder in 2023. I think it was the 40th overall pick. And they turned those two picks into a deal for the 29th and the 32nd picks last year with the Indiana Pacers. That turned into Julian Strother and Jalen Pickett. And then Denver took Hunter Tyson with the 37th overall pick that they already had. So in total, the Nuggets have traded their 2023, 2025, 2027, and 2029 first-round picks for Aaron Gordon, Peyton Watson, Julian Strother, and Jalen Pickett. Good players. Like, Aaron Gordon, certainly super helpful. He helped Denver win their first championship. Peyton Watson, we will see. Julian Strother, we will see. Jalen Pickett, we will see. Denver tried to go for a more sustainable route than Boston did, in my opinion. They tried to do that. Boston has cycled veterans in and out, but they found ways to recoup draft picks and not commit too many future assets Boston has. And as a result, it's Denver that is exhausted of their future capital and not Boston, because Denver's actually turned those draft picks into players. They've started the clock on those assets. And you never want to refer to players as assets, but when you're talking about building a team, it is true. It's the time value of money, right? Like, Denver could be using those roster spots on other veterans, whether it was JaMychal Green, who they decided to salary dump, or if it was a minimum draft pick or a minimum salary, or maybe you trade a couple minimums and you turn it into a slightly larger salary. Yada, yada. Denver decided to go down that route. But now that they're down it, that's kind of it. Like, this is the path that they've chosen. This is the way that they've gone. You are now sort of stuck unless you flip some of those young players for draft capital, for something else, whether it's draft picks, veterans, other young players, whatever it is. So given that they've gone down that road, given that commitment, that belief that Calvin Booth clearly has in this group, it makes me want to see that young trio play. Peyton Watson, Julian Strother, Jalen Pickett. Like, if Booth believes in them, it's for a reason. It's not like he drafted them with the belief that they would help the Nuggets win basketball games. And so, who am I to judge on the outside if he has seen that, if he believes, and maybe there is a pathway for those guys to continue to be solid NBA players? Might be a pathway for Peyton Watson to be even more than that. I think we've seen that pretty clearly. With Julian Strother, I'm a little bit more concerned, obviously, but I understand the theory of the practice. With Pickett, I still need to see more, and Michael Malone still clearly needs to see more, because that's the reason why Colin Gillespie was playing and not Pickett. So the way that the Celtics were team building, I understand why they've done what they've done. They have been a little bit more cold and calculating. Brad Stevens is their GM now. He was their coach. He's now their GM. He's done a great job of maximizing what his team needs and putting them into the best position to succeed. Rather than settling for having Malcolm Brogdon and Robert Williams and Marcus Smart, guys are like, yeah, maybe they could help you win. Or maybe you could go get Drew Holiday, who's clearly proven that he's good enough to help a team win. Kristaps Porzingis, who was clearly talented enough in Washington and just needed to be in a better situation in order to be successful. He identified a need, executed that, and made it happen. Even if it meant trading one of your hometown guys, Marcus Smart, who they drafted back in 2014, had been with the team for 9 years, And sometimes you need to make those moves. It's very similar to the Gary Harris move. Back when Denver traded Harris and those first-round picks for, first-round picks. They traded R.J. Hampton when he was actually a... No. My math is all off. I think I'm off on picks. But, yeah, it's tough. Oh, you know what it was? You know what I'm thinking of? the reason why I thought it was for Aaron Gordon was because when Denver drafted RJ Hampton, it was their 2023 or 2025 first round pick that they actually acquired and then they sent to Orlando. So that's the reason. It's not actually the way it was in theory, though. Either way, what I'm trying to say is that if there's an opportunity that presents itself, if there's an opportunity for the Nuggets to better their team, to put them in a better place to succeed, you have to do it. Like, you can't be sentimental in these stages because the world remembers champions. It remembers championships. The Miami Heat, as awesome as they've been over the course of these last 6 or so years that they've had Jimmy Butler, they are not going to be remembered in the way that these champions are, despite going to 2 NBA finals. It's all about the championships, as the Nuggets have really sort of figured out. And that's a lot of pressure, obviously, that's put onto individual players and fans have been putting onto their players and guys and making sure that the team is being the steward for Nikola Jokic's career and whatnot, as Calvin Booth sort of coined his own title. And he's right. He's absolutely right about it. So I'm curious to see what happens. I'm curious to see where it goes. Let's go through some comments here. Manny says, Boo should have been more proactive after we won the title last year, made a big deal to create better depth on the team. I'm not sure if that's the case. Like, I don't know, but like, think about it from this perspective. Like, Jrue Holiday was acquired by 2 first-round picks and a couple of veterans in Malcolm Brogdon and Robert Williams that the Blazers are not going to keep around. Like, Robert Williams played 6 games. If he was healthy, then some team would have traded for him. But if Denver could have gotten Jrue Holiday from the Blazers, like, they probably should have done it. Like, if I'm being honest, I'm not sure if they could have. Like, they may not have had the assets to do it, particularly because they traded a 2029 first round pick and what ultimately was a 2024 first round pick for Julian Strother, and turning what was kind of an iffy draft pick situation into something different. It's not iffy at all. Now Denver doesn't have any future draft picks that they can trade. So could Denver have gotten Jrue Holiday? Maybe not. Could they have gotten Marcus Smart? Maybe. Maybe they could have gotten in on that. Now, to be fair, I understand not breaking up your team for Marcus Smart. Like, Denver just won a title. But what it says to me, it's not necessarily about breaking up the starting five or being cold-blooded with that. It's about, hey, you've got young guys that you're committing to, and you're committing several years over. Not sure if I would go that direction either. Let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to chat about, will we ever see a Nuggets-Celtics NBA Finals? Will we ever see that? We'll be back on Pickaxe and Roll.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, we're back. Final segment, Pickaxe and Roll. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Let's wrap up. Are we going to see a Nuggets-Celtics NBA Finals, and why is the CBA sort of preventing that? This felt like the year for that, right? This felt like the year that the Nuggets and Celtics were going to meet. It felt like they were on a collision course. Many people predicted it. And then the second round happened. Denver ran into the team that was their kryptonite, and they could not find a way out of it. It really was, and I described it as this during the Western Conference Finals when Minnesota was getting their ass handed to them by Dallas. It was a game of rock, paper, scissors at the end for the Western Conference Finals, because it was clear as day that Dallas was a tough matchup for Minnesota, clear as day that Minnesota was a tough matchup for Denver. Denver would have been a tough matchup for Dallas because they had a couple of players that they could use to guard a technician like Kyrie, a physical driver like Luka. Could they have stopped him? No. But there was nobody that could have really guarded Jokic, and Dallas would have really struggled to guard Denver's inside-out game. Like, they're struggling to guard Boston, and they're driving, not as much even as they would have struggled to guard Denver, in my opinion. But this happens. This is how it goes. Like, Denver could not be the best version of themselves at the time that they needed to, and that's on them. Like, they should feel livid. They should be very frustrated, because I know the fans are, that's for sure. Maybe it should have happened this year. Maybe it should have happened last year when Denver ultimately won it. Boston went down 3-0 inexplicably to Miami, won the next three games in a row, and then lost Game 7. Like, that was a year that they probably should have done it, that's for sure. Ultimately, that didn't happen then. Maybe Denver and Boston just alternate years. Maybe these teams never meet up. And maybe that's fine. Although I think if Denver had met Boston this year, I think that Boston probably wins it. While Jokic would have killed, I think that Denver would have been exhausted, would have been very drained. Now, they would have been able to switch a little bit better and guard a little bit better against Tatum and Brown, maybe than they would have against Luka and Kyrie, but it would be tough. It would be very tough. Like, KCP is not stopping Jaylen Brown, and he's been killing it. And then Aaron Gordon stopping Jason Tatum. Do you flip those matchups? How do you do it? How do you handle it? Not necessarily sure. They would be hunting Murray. They'd be hunting Porter. It'll be tough. That's a tough matchup for Denver now. And maybe that's one where Peyton Watson would have thrived. Maybe it's one where Christian Brown would have thrived. Who knows? But we don't get to ask those questions. It's not reasonable. Like, Denver doesn't get a hypothetical championship out of it. So here are the teams that have made the finals in the 2020s so far, dating back to the 2019-20 bubble season. You've got Boston twice, you've got Miami twice, you've got the Lakers, you've got the Bucks, you've got the Suns, you've got the Warriors, you've got the Nuggets, you've got the Mavericks. So, five different teams in the West, Boston twice, Miami twice, Bucks once. It's a lot. 8 out of 10 possible, like, individual matchups. Parity's alive and well. Not only have there been no repeat champions, but only two franchises have returned to the finals at all during that stretch, which says it all. Like, it's really, really hard to get to the finals right now in either conference, and it's hard to sustain winning. There's a lot of great players. It's why expansion is such a discussed topic right now, because there's so much talent in the NBA that it probably needs to be dispersed a little bit more. Because the top 20 teams in the NBA this year, I think, all had positive net ratings. Like, it's so rare. Usually it's like 15, maybe 16 or 17. The top 20 teams had positive net ratings and were great. Like, all of them were justifiably good. And so this is Adam Silver's NBA. This is all about parity. It's all about the CBA really ensuring that teams are not just all good, but none of them are really truly great, except for Boston this year, except for Denver last year. Boston's getting expensive here really soon, just like Denver did, just like Golden State did, just like Milwaukee before them. Champions, they struggle to maintain peak levels. They struggle to kind of capitalize on the financials, where they'll sign these deals, they'll make sure that the team has the right players at the right time, right then, And then 2 years later, when they're still trying to hold on to what was good, it's not necessarily the same thing. So Denver has got to guard against that. They've got to make sure that they don't get too locked in to what they have. I wrote about this in trying to figure out where I was going to write this. It's the life cycle. That's right. Champions struggle to maintain their peak levels. It's the life cycle of any contender. I wrote about that when I wrote about KCP today. I wrote about how it's a struggle for the Nuggets to bring back Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Not just because, like, you know, he's a player. It makes sense. They have the full bird rights. They can pay him. They can pay him as much as they want to. The question is whether they should, and the question is whether it's the right thing to do. And for most, the answer is yes. The answer is, yeah, you're going to lose him for nothing. Why would you do that? But now that the CBA is the way that it is, you lose access to your taxpayer MLE. You, like, if you're in the second apron, you're going to have your draft pick frozen. If you're in there for multiple years, you could potentially have it moved to the end of the first round guaranteed. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that is working against teams that are trying to contend year in and year out and get expensive and more expensive every single season. Like, there's a lot of reasons to not do that, especially if you're trying to prolong success. Now, what you got to guard against, and what I wrote about later, is that Denver's got to be very focused on the now. They got to be very focused on the fact that Nikola Jokic turns 30 in this next February. He's not going to be at the peak of his powers forever. And you might as well capitalize on the time when he's at his best, if you possibly can. So, I'm a bit worried about it. I'm a bit worried that the Nuggets are, like, yeah, they're thinking about 2024. We'll see what they do. But are they thinking about 2027 more? Maybe, are they thinking about that a little bit too much? Like, can you balance out whether you're thinking about, like, the current iteration of the Nuggets and maximizing that with the future iteration of the Nuggets? Obviously, you don't want to drop completely out of the window when it comes to, like, hey, you don't have any assets at all in these next upcoming runs without Jokic or Murray or Porter or whatever. You don't want that. But you also don't want to leave anything on the table, you know? You want to make sure that you're committing everything to this current point in time where you are at your best. And because the Nuggets, they had as good, if not better, of a chance than anybody in the Western Conference to win the NBA championship this year. They could have given Boston a run for their money. Do I think they would have won it? Like I said, no. Would I bet against Denver? No. The Nuggets have to ensure that they can get back to the finals before these young teams start taking over. Obviously, Minnesota is kind of in the same boat as Denver is, despite Ant being so young, because they've got Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert. They've got some really, really pricey contracts that they're trying to figure out how to deal with. And so they're up against the second apron themselves. But Oklahoma City, they're not worried about it quite yet. They will eventually get expensive, but they're not there. And they also have so many resources, so many draft picks, that their window is going to stay open. San Antonio, they're going to go hunting with Wemby. Like, yeah, they'll probably be pretty patient, but they're not going to be so patient that they're going to miss out on an opportunity while Wemby's so good to try to get him some playoff experience and maybe some championship experience immediately. And then Memphis is going to be surprisingly good next year too. So while I don't necessarily think that Denver's got to worry about teams like the Warriors or the Suns or the Lakers going forward, they will have to worry about the Mavericks and the Wolves, who are already there. They're going to have to worry about OKC. They're going to have to worry about San Antonio. Houston's another team to worry about. Probably not worried as much about, like, Sacramento, but they're also another young team that could still sort of bounce back and has some upward trajectory. So it's tough. It's really tough. I think that Denver's got to keep trying to keep the pedal to the metal. They can't just sit on their laurels and allow guys to develop too much. Because if you do, then you're missing out on the best possible team that you can field while Jokic is at his best. And that's your best chance for a championship. And sometimes you just got to capitalize on what's your best option. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. So we'll see what happens. I've been very adamant about trying to understand what Denver should do. The funny thing is that KCP re-signing him is probably, Denver should re-sign KCP if they're trying to capitalize on the here and now. If they're trying to capitalize on this moment. If they're trying to be progressive and forward-thinking, then they might let him go. They might let him walk, and they might try to reset their salary bill a little bit, reconfigure their team a little bit. What that does involve is taking a hit this year. And as much as I've made the argument for that, I'm now making the argument against it. These conversations are so difficult. And trying to figure out whether Denver can maintain or prolong their success is impossible. It's really, really difficult. So I'm curious to see where they go from here. Bad Corp asks, Ryan, do you think we could sign and trade KCP for two players like Caruso and AO or something? First and foremost, why? Like, why would Chicago do that? I think that Caruso is on par with KCP as a player. AO is so young already, and like he's could basically be there already in terms of how good he is. I don't see a way that Chicago does that and justifies it, unless Denver's giving up assets. I don't see it as a deal that makes sense for either side, frankly. Just for two players in general. Yeah, I mean, they could do it. Like, it's legal to do it. Denver would have, like, the money number that they would need to take back is in line with his player option number, I believe. Or maybe what's his cap hold? Because Denver can't just, like, hypothetically, let's say he signs for $15 million. I don't think that they could take back more than 110% of $15 million, which would be about 16.5. If he signs for 20, does that mean that they can sign for 20 despite the fact that his player option was 15.4? Does his cap hold get into effect? Maybe I'll ask Jake Coyne, that stat squatch. I'll ask him. I'll see if we could come up with something. But it's not a bad idea. Like, turning KCP, a starter, into two players that could come off the bench is not the worst idea. I floated a similar idea on the last podcast, just kind of in a roundabout way. So it's interesting to see. Gonna be tough. Gonna be tough. Folks, the draft is in about a week and a half. It starts on Wednesday, June 26th. First round, and then second round will be Thursday, June 27th. Over the course of next week, I'll be doing some work on prospects, I would think. I'll also be doing some free agency preview stuff because there is a lot to discuss in a very short amount of time. I will probably have CT Fazio on, who you all know. We'll see whether he can provide some more insight rather than draft day Ron Holmes and Tristan Newton, which has been his calling card on Twitter lately. But we'll see what happens. I'm very curious to see what Denver does. They've got the 28th overall pick and the 56th overall pick in the draft. Do they use those? Do they trade those? We'll find out. That is going to do it for this episode of Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Number 38 and Bet Online. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Appreciate all the love and support on the podcast, folks. Happy Friday night, or if you're in Serbia, good morning on this Saturday morning. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button on the way out. I will talk to you guys very soon.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.